We spoke about China yesterday in episode 888-888. Today, 889, we speak about Pakistan. So it's not as if we are obsessed with our adversaries. These two are the biggest two neighbors that we have. We have issues with them, but they are the two biggest neighbors. So anything that happens is of interest. And also, sometimes what happens, as our professor Steve Cohen used to say, that nations make a big mistake when they make their strategic assessments. So what they do is, or when they start looking at strategic threats. So he used to say that sometimes nations act like somebody who looks at the mirror, makes faces at himself, and gets scared by what he or she sees in the mirror. So that is a way of saying that you cannot have a knowledge-free and information-free analysis even to of countries or forces that may be adversarial to you. Because unless you know, you cannot understand and you cannot devise policies, strategy, responses, anything. So you have to understand your neighbors, particularly those neighbors which may be of particular concern to you. So Pakistan is one of them. Pakistan, in this case, we are not looking at Pakistan's nukes or Pakistan's terror factories or what's happening between Pakistan and Afghanistan. The Taliban, Pakistan now has a colony finally called Afghanistan, run by the Taliban, and it's a problematic colony to have. But beyond all that, there is also the people of Pakistan. In fact, more important than all that is the people of Pakistan. That is nearly 23, 24 crore people. And these people are reeling under very heavy inflation right now. Their government is dealing with an economic collapse of sorts because a trade deficit is widening, inflation is rising, and the country is more or less bankrupt, particularly for foreign exchange. So what's happened in the country now is, we've done two more episodes on Pakistan's economy in the past, and I noticed some time back. So there was episode 171 and episode 191, of which I will share links with you. You can see them. And now what we also started doing is, sometimes when things we spoke about in the past become very relevant now, we republish those older episodes by abridging them and editing them, because our viewership, our audience has also grown a great deal over time. And I find that you appreciate watching those also. So we might even do that later in the week. But today, let me talk about what's the latest on Pakistan. The latest on Pakistan is that Pakistan was so broke for foreign exchange. And you know, we in India should know what it means to be broke with foreign exchange. We faced that situation in 1991, in the summer of 1991, when Narasimha Rao government took over, India was on the verge of a default on its foreign payments because India did not have any foreign exchange left. And that is when the IMF bailout came in. Mind you, that was the last IMF bailout India took. That was 30 years back. Even that bailout, India did not have to utilize all of it, because utilizing all of it would have meant also fulfilling all the conditions, or which are called conditionalities for some reason. And also, because India immediately reformed its economy with that 1991 budget, things began to improve and India's foreign exchange situation began to improve. So India did not need to take out that full loan from IMF. Since then, India has not had to go to IMF for any bailout. Pakistan, on the other hand, since the 80s, is now into its 13th IMF bailout. And this bailout also had been stopped about 6 months back because the IMF said, you are not fulfilling the conditions, or what we call in our region conditionalities for some reason. Again, I just can't help chuckling over this. Pakistan, those are very onerous conditionalities. You have to up your taxes, you have to up the prices of goods and services that the state provides, or where the state controls prices. Fuel, for example. Pakistan fuel has become expensive now. It's becoming expensive by the month, because IMF now says you have to raise your taxes on fuel, on petrol, by 4 rupees a month until your overall increase goes to 30 rupees. Now, even then, at 146 to 150 rupees a litre, Pakistan petrol is about less than half the price it is in India, because Pakistan rupee is now about 176 to a dollar. So a Pakistani rupee, two Pakistani rupees do not make one Indian rupee at this point. So what this does is, this explains to you the larger problem. The larger problem is that inflation is now going up. Governments having to up the revenues. Governments upping the revenues on what is imported. What is imported leads to an outgo of foreign exchange. That leads to a shortage of foreign exchange, which means more borrowing at expensive rates, and I will tell you about that. And then it becomes a vicious cycle. So Pakistan is caught in that vicious cycle. And that's how the more they borrow and the more they spend to import, the more their rupee weakens. So the rupee has weakened, Pakistani rupee has weakened by 15%, by more than 15% in the last 6 months. So two things have now happened. One, Pakistan is involved in feverish discussions with IMF saying, look, we will do what you want us to do. For example, they've started with this fuel tax. They've also made electricity more expensive. Just as fuel in Pakistan may be less than half the price that we pay in India, electricity in Pakistan is more than twice the price we pay in India. So they are upping those prices. They are also increasing their taxes. And there are some difficult conditions that IMF has put. For example, they say that under your law, Pakistan, your Reserve Bank equivalent governor, that is central bank governor in Pakistan, he reports to the Prime Minister of Pakistan. We don't want that. We want you to make it autonomous. So we want your central bank to have the autonomy on setting rates, etc., etc. Because IMF does not want a repetition of what's happening in Turkey, Pakistan's new big brother, right? Because in Turkey, as inflation goes up, Erdogan tells his central bankers to actually cut interest rates. And as that happens, inflation goes up further. And he carries on because he's a dictator and the central bank governor doesn't do it. He fires them. I think he's fired three already in the last couple of years. So IMF does not want any of that happening in Pakistan. So they are putting the pressure on Pakistan. So IMF and Pakistan are close to settling on the release of the first tranche of $1 billion, right? Out of the $6 billion bailout that was given out, that was promised earlier. So that $1 billion will come, but it will be a small relief. Pakistan right now had no money to pay for anything, including oil. So what did they do? They went to the Saudis instead, right? And they told the Saudis, you have the money and you have the oil. We don't even have the money to buy oil anymore. So please help us. So what have the Saudis done? They've helped them. They've given them money. But like all big brothers are different from elder brothers, mind you. Like all big brothers, they've also put conditions which essentially are onerous, as lenders usually do, but also in some ways humiliating, and I will explain to you why. So onerous why? First of all, the interest rate is very high. Interest rate is 4%. 4% on dollar borrowings is almost three times at which sovereigns can borrow internationally. In fact, some sovereigns can borrow at less than one-third of this. So Pakistan is paying three times more than what sovereigns pay, what sovereign countries pay. It is about the same interest rate. In fact, 4% might be even a little higher, a little bit higher than what the Chinese charge, because Chinese are the most usurious lenders in the world right now. Now, Saudis have charged Pakistan even more. This is a loan about $4.2 billion. $4.2 billion will not come in Pakistan's bank now. $3 billion Pakistan already had in the bank. They had borrowed in 2018. That was to be given over now. That, because Pakistan cannot give it over, Saudis have extended it by a year. But you know what have they done? The earlier interest rate on this loan was 3.2%. The Saudis have now made it 4%. Then I told you that Saudi loan to Pakistan is $4.2 billion. So what is the remaining $1.2 billion? So the Saudis have said, look, you can now buy oil from us. We know that you don't have the money. So every month you can buy $100 million worth of oil over 12 months. That is $1.2 billion. You can pay for it later, but interest rate on this also will be 3.8%. Once again, first of all, you take exchange risk because your rupee is weakening. And then you pay such high interest rates. And those interest rates have to be paid simultaneously. Now, not just that, this gets problematic. And I will also tell you in a minute why it gets humiliating. First of all, interest. At this rate, Pakistan has to pay $120 million every year just in interest to Saudi Arabia. Now, you may think, oh, $120 million doesn't sound so much. But I will also give you a sense of the size of Pakistan's economy. And that will tell you then that in that context, this is a lot of money. This is $24 million in the year more than what Pakistan was paying since 2018 on the same loan. It is not a fresh loan. It's the same loan which has been extended, right? It's a kind of evergreening of the loan. Now, where the conditions of the loan get really brutal is what happens in case of a default. And what is it that the Saudis would call a default? So, Saudis have said that there are three conditions which we will see as defaults. If one of the three things happen, we will say there is a default. What are these three? Number one, if you fail to fulfill any international obligation of debt repayment over $100 million at any point of time, right, there will be a default, right? And then I will tell you what will happen if there is a default. That's where the humiliation comes in. Number two, if you are in violation of any clause in this loan agreement at any point of time, Saudi government can declare it to be a default. Number three, if you cease to be a member of IMF any day, it is an immediate default. What happens in case of the default is where it gets nastier. If there is a default, Saudi Arabia can confiscate this money or demand this money to be paid back within 72 hours, right? I mean, you haven't even seen a housing loan being given away like that. You haven't even seen one of those credit card companies coming at you like that. You haven't even seen a gold loan, anything, or the most usurious of loans paid on those conditions, that I can declare a default on my own and I can force you to pay. And you have no real recourse to anything, because you know what? What happens in these cases? You can go to International Court of Justice, you can go to your own courts, but no. Pakistan in this case has forfeited its sovereign immunity rights. So Pakistan has no sovereign immunity left anymore, no immunity against a legal suit, an attachment, or any legal powers. And if there is a dispute on these loans, this will be subject to settlement under the Saudi law, not the Pakistani law. So there is a lot of Pakistani sovereignty surrendered in this case. That is, provided much was left after what's already been surrendered to the Chinese in turn. But the Pakistanis are actually happy with this because they are relieved. And they are saying that, look, we are right now, we know it's tough, but this will help us write this situation out. And we are now finalizing a similar agreement with another friendly government. I suspect it would be UAE, with another friendly government for a similar debt arrangement. Certainly, Turkey is not going to be giving them debt of this kind. And certainly, the Chinese may give them a little more money. They have a $62 billion CPEC going on, so they might release another billion or so. But the fact is that Chinese are very careful about where that money is spent. In fact, even the Saudis in this case have made sure that this money will be kept in a designated account. So they keep an eye on how it's being utilized and also on the repayment possibilities. So if anything, Saudis now have the power of holding Pakistan to reasonable good conduct on many issues. Now, as I told you, you might say $120 million, so many Indian companies, so many others pay $120 million in interest, right? What's the big deal? So look at the size of Pakistan's economy. Pakistan's economy right now is about $263 billion. It's about a little less than a tenth of India's economy now. Didn't used to be the case like that. That gap has increased greatly in spite of the fact that India had a very bad last year. India had an awful 2021. Despite that, Pakistan's economy is about one-tenth of India's. Pakistan's population is not one-tenth of India's. Pakistan's population is about a little more than one-fifth of India. So $263 billion is Pakistan's total GDP. Compare that with Bangladesh's. Bangladesh, smaller population than Pakistan, is now 324 billion. Look at your state of Tamil Nadu in India. Tamil Nadu, with a population which is less than one-third of Pakistan, or about one-third of Pakistan, has GDP of $297 billion. That is $34 billion more than Pakistan's, with one-third the population. Maharashtra, 370 billion. That is $107 billion more than Pakistan's, at about half of Pakistan's population. Gujarat, 230 billion, with about one-fourth of Pakistan's population. But at the same time, there are sobering regions in India also. Look at Uttar Pradesh, exactly the same population as Pakistan, almost to the last decimal point. Although we rely on estimated figures in each case because we haven't had a very recent census in Uttar Pradesh, but Uttar Pradesh is 240 billion. So with the same number of people as Pakistan, UP actually lags Pakistan. So India has a state in the population size of Pakistan, which is poorer than even Pakistan, whereas India also has a state one-third the size of Pakistan, that is Tamil Nadu, which is much richer than Pakistan. And then you also have Madhya Pradesh, again a state with about half the population of Pakistan and about half the GDP of Pakistan. So in fact, if you look at the state of Pakistan's economy today, think of Madhya Pradesh. Madhya Pradesh is almost exactly like Pakistan's economy, both in per capita terms and also total terms also. Now, this is becoming problematic for Imran Khan, because one of his big campaign pitches when he defeated Nawaz Sharif, although he needed the help of First Empire, Second Empire, Third Empire and the rest, and the Board of Political Control in Pakistan, which is the general headquarters, he needed the help of all of them to defeat Nawaz Sharif. But his campaign pitch was that, look, Pakistani self-respect, I'm a self-respecting Pakistani, I'm not somebody who will allow the loot of Pakistan's money, I will never go to a foreign country with a begging bowl. I'd rather die, he said, than take the begging bowl to foreigners. But that's precisely what he's doing. He's done some things right. For example, last year, the pandemic year, whatever he did not have a full lockdown like India and like many other countries. He had these graded lockdowns, limited lockdowns, or wherever numbers went up, he locked down local areas. So local lockdowns, but he did not have an overall national lockdown. And at that point when he talked about it, people mocked him. Some of us also thought that he was wrong, but he turned out right, because his economy last year did not suffer the ravages that, say, India's economy did. So India's economy had gone into negative zone last year quite heavily, 7% or so negative, in fact a little bit more than 7% negative. But this year, even this year, IMF does not expect Pakistan to grow at more than 3.9%, which means there is not going to be a recovery, and this is a low base. So this low base will continue. Now, in this political panic, when you are in political panic, politicians do what politicians should do, which is to go and reassure their voters. But that's usually counterintuitive to good economics, right? That is where politics runs contrary to good economics. So seeing rising prices, particularly of food products, Pakistan's inflation rate for the month of November now for food products, soap, fuel has gone to 11.5%. It's a lot, right? It's gone up by 3 percentage points over the previous month. It's a lot of inflation. Now, to soften that blow, he's announced a $700 million scheme to distribute free grain and stuff, a kind of scheme that in Punjab, the Badal started, Atta Dal scheme. So he started something like that in Pakistan, which is free. He's allocated another 12 billion rupees. And once again, see these figures in the context of the size of Pakistan's economy. For a discount, so the poorer people, that is about 13 crore people in Pakistan, can buy ghee, atta, dal, other essential commodities, mainly to do with food, at 30% discount. So government will pay for that discount. This is the kind of price subvention by the government. These things, history tells us, these things don't usually work, but they've gone ahead and do it. So it's in this situation now that Pakistan has to deal with multiple problems. Imran Khan has a lot of dissidents rising, a lot of his coalition partners are getting impatient now because they don't want to suffer anti-incumbency. Nawaz Sharif living overseas is becoming active. You can see that there is tension between him and the GHQ. But most importantly, the most important challenge for him is that people are getting restless. And in the middle, while he has signed his humiliating loan conditions, all these loans have to be paid back, because if you don't pay back, in this case, there will be consequences, or there can be consequences.